This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Terrorism at a Navy base. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Monday, December 9th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what's up this hour.
Authorities say a deadly shooting by a Saudi soldier in training at a naval air station in Florida is being investigated as terrorism.
The House Judiciary Committee meets today to consider findings from the Intelligence Committee about articles of impeachment against President Trump.
There's been a deadly eruption of a volcano in New Zealand on an island that's popular with tourists.
And why wage growth remains a stumbling block in the hottest job market in decades.
This economy is basically the hottest since the late 1990s, but the pay then was going up over 4% a year. So we're like a full percentage point below that, and you kind of scratch your head and say, what's going on here?
Heather Long at the Washington Post goes in depth on why wages are not growing faster. U.S. authorities are investigating a deadly shooting at a military base in Florida as an act of terrorism. Mohammed al-Shamrani used a handgun to open fire in a classroom Friday morning, killing three U.S. service members at a naval air station, Pensacola, before being shot dead by authorities. Mr. al-Shamrani, a 21-year-old second lieutenant in the Royal Saudi Air Force, had been in the U.S. since 2017 for a training program that he was scheduled to complete in August. The shooter used a 9mm handgun that he had purchased legally in the U.S. Here's Rear Admiral Gary Mays.
Know that the security forces are doing what needs to be done to make NAS Pensacola and bases and installations around the world as safe as possible.
The training was in connection with the sale of U.S. military equipment to the country and was being funded by the Saudi government. Saudi Arabia has a history of sending members of its armed forces here for training, all of whom are said to be vetted for security by both countries. To Washington now, where Democratic lawmakers could vote later this week on articles of impeachment against President Trump. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler of New York told NBC's Meet the Press that his panel will not decide on these specific articles until after a hearing today to consider evidence gathered by the House Intelligence Committee in its investigation of Mr. Trump's dealings with Ukraine.
There is overwhelming evidence, uncontested by the Republicans, that the president put himself above the country, that the president sought foreign assistance in elections, sought to cover it up.
Florida Republican Matt Gaetz responded on ABC's This Week.
This impeachment is exclusively supported by Democrats in Congress. It's not just that Democrats can't persuade people like me who support the president. They can't even persuade Republicans like Will Hurd, who are critics of the president, to support this impeachment.
The Democrats' impeachment inquiry focuses on Mr. Trump's request that Ukraine investigate former Vice President Joe Biden, a leading contender to face Mr. Trump in the November 2020 election. A volcano erupted earlier today off the coast of New Zealand, spewing a plume of ash more than 2 miles into the air. There have been a number of fatalities and injuries from the eruption on White Island, an area popular with tourists that's about 30 miles off the east coast of New Zealand's North Island. 23 people, some of them believed to be tourists from the Ovation of the Seas cruise ship, were rescued from White Island. Police, though, said others were still on it. New Zealand Deputy Police Commissioner John Timms.
We initially believed that there were 100 people on or near the island. We now know that there is fewer than 50. Some of these people have been transported to shore. However, there is a number still remaining on the island who are currently unaccounted for.
There will be questions asked as to why tourists were still able to visit the island after some scientists recently noted an uptick in volcanic activity. White Island became a private scenic reserve in 1953, and daily tours allow more than 10,000 people to visit the volcano every year. Thanks for being with us. By just about any metric, this is the best job market since the late 90s. The economy has been adding jobs for 110 straight months, including 266,000 in November, which we just learned on Friday. Jobs are plentiful. Unemployment is at a half-century low. And the unemployment rate for African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, and Americans with less than a high school education are all at the lowest level since the Labor Department began keeping track. But Heather Long, economics correspondent at the Washington Post, says one of the lingering black marks on this strong jobs picture is why wages aren't growing. Heather, set this up.
The big number everyone's talking about is 3.1%. That is the average hourly pay growth in the past year. At first glance, it sounds pretty good. It's certainly better than it was a year ago when it was under 3%. But, you know, as I point out in my story, that this economy is basically the hottest since the late 1990s. But the pay then was going up over 4% a year. So we're like a full percentage point below that. And you kind of scratch your head and say, what's going on here?
Yeah. So, right, logic from the simpleton in me says employers are struggling to find people. Therefore, they need to pay more to find these folks or to get these folks or retain them. But that's not really what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't tell you how many quotes I've had from economists and business leaders saying exactly what you just said. They've been predicting for year after year. I think I ran the first piece like this, predicting that 2016 would be the year we'd see a big spike in wage growth. It didn't happen. Then it didn't happen really in 2017, 2018. And now in 2019, again, we're a little higher, but we've been inching higher. There's been no spike like there has in past boom periods. And so that's, again, you're right. That's what doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. If employers are really struggling to find people, what's going on? And there's a lot of theories. Of course, some people are quick to say, oh, you know, there's not as many labor unions anymore. Workers aren't able to bargain for higher wages. Other people immediately point to health care costs. So the money that may have been going to increase the workers' hourly pay is instead going to pay for higher health care costs for employees. Other people say, actually, these companies are whining a bit. And the reality is, we don't have as many people employed today as we did in the past, you know, the sort of employment ratio, if you will, the percent of Americans working in their prime age years is lower than it has been in the past. And that implies that there's still potentially a million or more workers on the sidelines who could potentially get back in. So maybe employers, they may not like what they're seeing. They may, you know, may not be the perfect candidate with a master's degree and eager to work for low wages, but there may still be a lot of workers out there. And that may be another reason that companies don't feel maybe as much pressure to raise wages as they did in the past.
Wow. We're speaking with Heather Long, economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Her story is called This is the Hottest Job Market Since the 1990s. Why Aren't Wages Growing Faster? You did point out, too, I think, that the working class folks and their wages are outpacing those of managers in some cases.
They are, and that's the good news. That is a little bit of evidence that both the minimum wage hikes that many states and cities have enacted are feeding through, and also that is more evidence of a tighter labor market when you see more competition for people working in the Walmarts and the McDonald's of the world. So those wages are growing just shy of 3.7% a year, so a good bit higher than 3.1. But again, those workers, what you might call the working people, they were seeing wage growth well over 4% in both the late 1990s and just before the Great Recession. So in 2006, 2007, when things were pretty tight, labor market also seeing that over 4% growth. We have not hit that level yet.
What's that word that you referenced in the story that's considered a phenomenon in economics? Is it monopsony?
You got it. You got it. It's a bit of a mouthful. We all know a monopoly, the idea that there's only one firm selling something so they can charge really high prices. Well, the other explanation for why wages aren't growing faster is that we have this monopsony concept. And what that means is there's tends more and more in many parts of the country, there's only one big employer, usually a hospital lately. And so if that company is only big game in town, they are the one buyer of labor. So they basically get to set the wage in the community. And unfortunately, a lot of those big players are setting wages lower than they would have in the past.
Thanks, Heather. Heather Long, economics correspondent at The Washington Post. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here now with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon, the FBI says it's treating Friday's deadly attack on a Florida Navy base as a presumed terrorist attack. The Saudi gunman, who was training at the Pensacola site, killed three sailors before he was shot dead. Special Agent Rachel Rojas says the FBI is trying to determine if he had connections to any group.
We are looking very hard at uncovering his motive, and I would ask for patience so we can get this right.
Rojas says other Saudi students had been questioned but not arrested. She gave few details of the investigation's findings so far, but said the 21-year-old gunman bought his weapon legally in the U.S. Number two, pushing ahead with articles of impeachment, the House Judiciary Committee convenes today to formally receive the investigative findings against President Trump. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler told NBC he expects the committee to vote soon on charges against Trump that will likely focus on abuse of power on Ukraine and obstruction in the congressional inquiry.
We're going to have the report from the Intelligence Committee, examination of their people by both sides. And after that, we'll have decisions to make about drafting articles and where it goes.
Trump calls the inquiry a hoax. Number three, more than 40 laborers died in New Delhi after a fire engulfed a factory where they worked and slept, making it one of the worst fire tragedies in India's capital in decades. The fire broke out in a building that was used to make paper products and women's purses. Elsewhere, a bunch of nail biters in the NFL yesterday, including the 49ers' 48-46 win over the Saints in New Orleans. Chris Carino with a call on Compass Media Networks as Robbie Gould hit the game-winning field goal.
Snap, spot down, kick on the way, it is good! The 49ers win it at the buzzer, 48-46. Here in New Orleans.
And the Chiefs clinched the AFC West with a 23-16 win over the Patriots as they survived a series of mistakes and questionable calls. The loss ended the Patriots' 21-game home win streak in the regular season and playoffs.
You didn't play the clip of the New York Jets and their exciting nail-biting win.
The biggest game yesterday was the Jets.
The mighty Jets.
What the heck?
And the mighty Dolphins,
yes.
Clash. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Like other luxuries once restricted to the wealthy, metal credit cards have trickled down the income stream. Capital One and other banks have added metal to some of their credit cards with the idea that the hefty feel makes customers think they're special and will maybe encourage them to spend more. Anna Maria Andriotis, consumer lending reporter at the Wall Street Journal, has spotted the trend. Anna Maria, what's happened here?
So for a long time, metal credit cards were really reserved for a small portion of the consumer population, specifically people who are quite wealthy, and metal was limited to a small number of cards. But what has happened in recent years is that a growing number of banks have been adding metal to more and more of their credit cards and basically using that as a way to try to incentivize everyday people to sign up for their cards and to use their cards more than they use other non-metal cards.
We're speaking with Anna Maria Andriotis, consumer lending reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece about the growing popularity of metal credit cards because the feeling is that, we have metal, therefore we're special, and this means we can spend.
There's this weird idea that metal cards somehow make people feel special and increase the chances that they'll use those cards more, that they'll spend more with those cards. And one of the reasons why we wrote this story is because it turns out that it kind of works. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who there's just, once they start using a metal card, they find it difficult to go back to plastic, and they find that people around them are impressed by these cards. So some of these experiences have been really interesting to just hear. So, for example, an individual who was sharing his experience paying for food at fast food restaurants like at Chick-fil-A or other sort of everyday type restaurants that they go to eat, and they'll say, the waiters comment or the cashiers will comment on the card. Another individual who said that he noticed that when he goes out on dates, the girls tend to be impressed when he pulls out a card, a metal card. And so, it's interesting because then I said, well, what kind of cards are these? Like, who are the bank? Who are the issuers? And so you might hear a story like that in the past about, the Black American Express card, which was one of the first more sort of well-known metal cards. And you'd say, oh, that kind of makes sense, because those cards are typically associated with very wealthy people. Yeah. So instead, these stories had to do with Capital One credit cards and other sort of everyday credit cards that pretty much most people can get.
It's Anna Maria Andriotis, consumer lending reporter at The Wall Street Journal. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the presidential candidate who could learn something from President Trump.
Goodbye 2019, goodbye Windows 7. Dell's holiday sales are the perfect time to say hello to 2020 and a Windows 10 upgrade. Save big on their latest business computers powered by Intel Core processors. Don't forget to shop servers, storage, and thousands of top-brand electronics, all with free shipping. Call a small business technology advisor to help you find the right tech for your business needs at 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
It's the time of year when everyone is traveling or running around getting thoughtful gifts for the people you care about. But what about you? Gordon Deal here to tell you about Audible. Pamper yourself with an Audible membership. Get an unbeatable selection of audiobooks, including bestsellers, motivation, mysteries, and more. Choose three titles every month. That's one audiobook plus two exclusive Audible originals you can't hear anywhere else. And listen on any device, anytime, anywhere with the Audible app. When your holiday flight's delayed, you'll be so glad you signed up for Audible. For a limited time, get 3 months of Audible for just $6.95 a month. That's over 50% off. I just finished listening How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I'm also a huge John Grisham fan, so one of his audiobooks is next. With Audible, you'll also enjoy easy audiobook exchanges and your own audiobook library that you keep forever, even if you cancel. Visit audible.com/Gordon or text Gordon to 500-500. That's audible.com/Gordon or text Gordon to 500-500.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce, everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades. Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the
top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top. Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, December 9. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Authorities investigating as terrorism a fatal shooting at a naval airbase in Florida. Deadly volcano eruption in New Zealand earlier today. The House Judiciary Committee meets to consider articles of impeachment. Carol Spinney, the man behind the Big Bird character on Sesame Street, has died at 85. Rapper Juice WRLD died suddenly yesterday of a seizure at age 21. 12 Days of Deals begins today at Best Buy for you shoppers, and why some people hang a pickle on their Christmas tree. Those theories in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Goodbye Windows 7, hello Windows 10. Dell's holiday sale helps you save big on the latest business computers with Intel Core processors, plus get free shipping. Call 877-BUY-DELL. Mike Bloomberg thinks he can become the Democratic nominee for president with an unconventional approach. Skip early voting states, such as Iowa and New Hampshire. Focus on rich, vote-rich states like California, and bombard voters with an endless stream of ads touting his accomplishments. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance, says that won't be enough. In fact, he says Mr. Bloomberg should campaign like Donald Trump did. Rick, he doesn't connect with people?
Not the way Trump does, I don't think, but it's also a media strategy. So, I mean, we know the sort of conventional strategy, which is make sure you qualify for the debates, first of all, and then get out there and get, you know, campaign in the early states, which is Iowa and New Hampshire. And Bloomberg is obviously not doing that. So he's not going to qualify for the televised debates. I think that's the biggest thing he has against him. So think about Trump. How did Trump get attention, free attention, by the way, when he ran his unconventional campaign? Well, he was outrageous. He generated tons of media attention. He used his Twitter account to remarkable effect. I mean, Trump is outrageous on Twitter, but it's a way of going around the traditional media. And I think Bloomberg, by definition, because he's not going to get the media coverage that the conventional candidates are going to be getting, I think he needs to do the same thing. And he's just not that kind of person. I mean, can anybody think of a single memorable tweet that Mike Bloomberg has put out there? I can't, but maybe he has some devotees who are listening out there who can say, oh, yeah, Bloomberg had a great tweet back in 2015 or whenever. It doesn't come to my mind.
To your point about him missing out on these TV debates because he can't qualify based on the way he's running his campaign, can that lost publicity, say, be equaled or made up by the rate, say, that he's purchasing television ads or social media buys?
My guess is partly, but not completely. And here's the reason. You know, TV ads are scripted, and there has been some research that shows that there's just a diminishing return from bombarding people with TV ads. I mean, they get sick of hearing you. They don't feel like they're seeing the real person. They feel like they're seeing an actor. And you have to, you know, then there's a whole trick of like getting the TV ads in front of them in the first place. I mean, you know, you run out of ad time in, you know, in some of the smaller markets in Iowa. There's only so much ad time, and people are. It's not like people sit there glued to the TV when a political ad comes on. I mean, they get up and go to the bathroom. So, I mean, it's an ad. It's an ad. I mean, so you can use it. You can use it to sort of increase name recognition and things like that. But, I mean, ads don't automatically convince anybody to do anything. Yeah. So, in part. But, Bloomberg cannot – it seems really clear. Bloomberg cannot simply buy his way to an electoral victory. And, you know, there is tons of money in politics, and money is important. But money doesn't always win. And you can go back to the 2016 Republican race where Jeb, with an exclamation mark, after it, Jeb Bush, had the most money, and he flamed out. And yeah. Trump's a billionaire, but he didn't really spend that much money on his campaign in 2016. He didn't have to because he generated so much media with his outrageousness and unconventional things like his Twitter account that he got through to people. And I just don't think Bloomberg has it in him to do that.
We're speaking with Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. You wrote, too, that the Democratic Party is not likely to give Mr. Bloomberg a megaphone. How come?
Well, they resent his late entry, and they clearly resent him trying to buy his way to the top of the polls. I mean, you know, many of these candidates, I mean, John Delaney, who a lot of people still haven't heard of, he's been campaigning since 2015 in Iowa and all these early states, and most of the rest of the candidates have been out there stumping since, you know, around spring of this year. And they just, and you know, voters, you do get points for showing up among voters. And, you know, especially in Iowa and New Hampshire, where politics is kind of like the state pastime, voters like to, they like to show up and hear what you have to say. And, you know, we know Bloomberg's strategy is just to skip the four earliest voting states altogether. He figures he doesn't have a chance, and focus on, you know, heavy advertising in the Super Tuesday states. That's early March of next year. I think he's going to get some traction. I just don't think he has a chance to get to the top.
Thanks, Rick. Rick Newman, senior columnist at Yahoo Finance. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it was a pretty thrilling weekend in the NFL with big matchups and last-second heroics. It also saw the end of the New England Patriots' 21-game home winning streak by the Kansas City Chiefs, a feat that may not have happened after a transportation fiasco. According to ESPN, a container holding some of their team's shoulder pads, helmets, and footballs was sent to Newark, New Jersey by accident instead of Foxborough, Massachusetts. The Chiefs were apparently responsible for the mishap after failing to take the equipment, including about 35 of the players' bags, off of the plane. At 2:39 p.m., about 90 minutes before kickoff, CBS reported that the bags had made it safely to Gillette Stadium. Sources told ESPN that if the Chiefs had failed to retrieve the equipment before the kickoff, they would have needed to forfeit the game.
Man!
That's crazy, isn't it?
That's insane.
I mean, something you never hear about, and something we don't think about, is that just the logistics it takes to get all of this equipment for, you know, like 60, 70 players, whatever it is, you know, to wherever it needs to go. I mean, you know, something we all this behind-the-scenes stuff. We see the players walk in, you know, dressed in their suits with their headphones, and, you know, there's a, you know, somebody, you know, driving up in a truck, you know, with all this equipment that needs to be unloaded after they walk in.
I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's easier to rely on equipment managers for this stuff rather than 54 players, as you said, to bring their individual bags, which, you know, they just because of human error, I forgot my cleats or I forgot my pants this week.
Right, and I guess this kind of thing, you know, pretty much never happens. So I'm not actually sure how they got into Newark in the first place. That's part of the story I'm kind of missing here. Why they went to Newark and not just directly from Kansas City to Boston or whatever.
That's strange. I've seen some of these logistics from the Giants locker room in my dealings with the Giants, where that stuff immediately goes out of the locker room onto crates that are rolled right onto a truck that is pulled like into the basement of MetLife Stadium.
Yes.
And that stuff gets loaded right onto a truck that is right outside the locker room.
Because you don't want to take anything to chance on those situations.
Exactly.
And it appears, Gordon, that the banana has split. When we last left you on Friday, the world was buzzing about the art installation in Miami consisting of a banana duct taped to a wall, which had been sold for the mind-boggling price of $120,000. As you might imagine, this sent curious people streaming to the museum to see it for themselves, which caused some problems with crowd control. As such, the piece titled The Comedian was taken down at the request of organizers. And that was after a, quote, hungry performance artist ate some of the banana on Saturday, which shocked some but not museum officials, who said that snacking on the banana did not destroy the artwork. Collectors have been buying the certificate of the art, not the banana itself, since, as we all know, bananas are not meant to last. It was already looking like it was kind of turning brown when I saw this guy pick it off the wall and eat it.
What?
I don't know. I don't know about any of this. None of this makes any sense to me whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
this entire story might as well have been in a foreign language as far as I was concerned.
Somebody started eating the banana.
Yeah, someone walked up, pulled it off the wall, and ate it. And, you know, obviously to some gasps from people who were watching, but I guess it was not a big deal. I guess this is just all part of the art world, Gordon, that you and I do not understand.
No. Did a sign say, do not eat artwork? No, well, maybe that was
that
was his entry point. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. The U.S. winter flu season is off to its earliest start in more than 15 years. An early barrage of illness in the South has begun to spread more broadly, and there's a decent chance flu season could peak much earlier than normal. On Twitter, the CDC said about half the country has high or moderate flu activity. The agency reminds us flu season lasts 14 weeks on average, so it's not too late to get vaccinated. NBC News says the last flu season to rev up this early was in 2003 and 4, a bad one. Some experts think the early start may mean a lot of suffering is in store, but others say it's too early to tell. There are different types of flu viruses, and the one causing illnesses in most parts of the country is a surprise. It's a version that normally doesn't abound about until March or April. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Kashenka is back with three big things you need to know.
Number one, Gordon, the FBI says it will work with the presumption that this was an act of terrorism after a shooting at a Florida Navy base left three sailors dead. The gunman has been identified as a 21-year-old Saudi national who was a naval student at Naval Air Station Pensacola. Rachel Rojas, the FBI special agent in charge of the investigation, says other Saudi students had been questioned but not arrested.
Their Saudi commanding officer has restricted them to base, and the Saudi government has pledged to fully cooperate with our investigation.
The FBI confirmed the weapon used in the attack was a Glock that was purchased lawfully. Number two, a Justice Department Inspector General report is expected to say the FBI had a legitimate basis to open its investigation into ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. It's also expected to say senior law enforcement officials weren't motivated by partisan bias, but it's also likely to cite multiple errors during the investigation, including by an FBI lawyer suspected of altering a document related to the surveillance of a former Trump campaign aide. That report will be released today. Number three, a volcano has erupted in New Zealand, leaving at least five dead and about 10 unaccounted for. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says tourists were seen walking inside the crater of White Island volcano just moments before the eruption.
We know that there were a number of tourists on or around the island at the time, both New Zealanders and visitors from overseas.
Two dozen people have been rescued, but conditions are hampering the operation. Elsewhere, an earthquake struck Tuscany north of Florence today, sending frightened people into the street in the middle of the night and slightly damaging some buildings. The Italian Geophysics Agency says the strongest in a series of tremblers was measured at magnitude 4.5. And what a Final Four we have lined up. LSU will play Oklahoma, and Ohio State will face defending national champion Clemson in the college football playoff, with both games set for December 28th. The selection committee revealed the pairings yesterday for the national semifinals, and the Final Four was no surprise. The only mystery involved which team would be the number one seed, and the committee selected LSU over Ohio State. The national championship game set for January 13th in New Orleans.
Oh, Jennifer, who's the best college football team in America?
We'll find out.
It's Clemson, isn't it?
No.
It's Clemson. They've been hiding in the shadows all year long behind LSU and Ohio State.
Oh, this is going to be great.
6 minutes in front of the hour. Coming up next, the history of pickles on Christmas trees.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today. You may have heard the unusual tradition of some people hanging a pickle ornament from their Christmas tree. The first child to find the ornament usually gets a present. Others believe the finder will be the recipient of good fortune in the new year. However, no one seems to know where the tradition comes from. Fox News says one theory is that in the late 1880s, Woolworth stores began selling glass ornaments imported from Germany that were made in the shapes of fruits and veggies, including the pickle. Maybe the green pickle color made it hard to find on the tree. Another theory includes a soldier in the American Civil War, when the soldier was taken prisoner on Christmas Eve. He reportedly begged a guard for one last pickle as he was dying. Well, the pickle apparently kept him alive, and when he returned home, he started hanging one on the tree. Meanwhile, many in one Michigan town celebrate the pickle every December. Berrien Springs holds a parade led by the Grand Dillmeister, who passes out fresh pickles along the parade route. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.